Thank you for downloading this podcast from the Echo page. Echo membership will provide you with unlimited access to other educational material, as well as a huge number of other advantages. Please check this out at www.echo-ibd.eu.
Welcome to the podcast on how to approach fibrosis in Crohn's disease. My name is Florian Rieder. I'm the head of IBD research and co-section head for inflammatory bowel diseases at the Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland, in Ohio. And I'm happy you selected this topic because it is a big clinical problem. Clinically obstructing stricture in Crohn's disease occurs in more than half of patients with Crohn's disease throughout their lifetime. And it causes significant clinical burden on the patient with abdominal pain, hospitalizations, need for surgical intervention, and so on and so on. And this can lead to many treatment goals in these patients, such as normalization of symptoms. They want to return to a normal diet, improvement on endoscopy and radiology, they want to avoid surgery or spare small intestinal losses due to frequent resections. We are actually quite good in diagnosing stricture in Crohn's disease with endoscopy. So if you have a luminal narrowing impossible or difficult to pass with an adult endoscope as defined by the SES-CD and the CDEIS is a criterion. The other is cross-sectional imaging such as MR enterography, CT enterography, or intestinal ultrasound. And there you find wall thickening, luminal narrowing, and pre-stenotic dilation as the major factors. And if you use those, the accuracy for CT and MR to diagnose strictures is in the 90s. For ultrasound, sensitivity is a bit lower, around 75%, because of the window that you have in the terminal ileum, but you may not see as well the other small bowel portions where strictures can also present. A big unresolved question in the field is how much fibrosis and how much inflammation is in a stricture, and conventional cross-sectional imaging, CT, MR, or ultrasound cannot reliably differentiate fibrosis and inflammation. There are several experimental techniques available: magnetization transfer MR enterography, delayed enhancement MR enterography, ultrasound elastography, all promising, but none of them have been validated, and particularly none of them have been externally validated. So there's more work needs to be done. But what do you do when a patient presents with acute obstruction due to stricture in Crohn's disease? And there are several decision points. Is there inflammation in the stricture? Does the patient have symptoms? Does the patient have associated conditions such as phlegmon, penetrating disease, abscess, dysplasia, malignancy, any contraindications to medical therapy or endoscopic therapy? And the first step in intervention is to treat with an anti-inflammatory in almost all cases, as inflammation and fibrosis are intimately intertwined and they correlate with each other. So there's a very high likelihood that you have some degree of inflammation in the stricture in a patient that presents with obstruction. The mainstay first-line therapy in most centers are corticosteroids, and they reduce bowel wall edema and open up the lumen. And this works actually in clinical experience quite well, even though the data supporting it is purely observational and small case series to date, even though now randomized controlled trials for this clinical scenario are ongoing. Immunomodulators have been tested in the randomized controlled trials in patients with subocclusive ileal Crohn's disease. Azathioprine was superior compared to mesalazine for rehospitalization and surgery up to 36 months. And the best data to date is available for an anti-TNF, adalimumab, in symptomatic small bowel strictures in Crohn's disease, the so-called Creol trial, which was in fact quite successful. Patients that present with acute obstruction after 24 weeks, 64% achieved success, which was defined as adalimumab continuation with no dilation, no surgery, or no use of corticosteroids after 8 weeks. So endoscopic therapy is the second option other than medical therapy, and it is indicated for symptomatic ileocolonic or colonic strictures. Isolated anastomotic strictures are preferred because they are shorter and they tend to be easier accessible. You can dilate upper GI strictures, and inflammation at the site of the stricture is not a contraindication to attempting this. And endoscopic balloon dilation, the right patients, can be quite successful, and the right patients have shorter strictures, less than 5 centimeters. And if you dilate them More than 80% feel better immediately with a relatively low complication rate of less than 3%. This includes bleeding, dilation-related surgery, and perforation. Long-term efficacy, if you dilate, about half of the patients need redilation after 1 year, and about 30% need surgery. So it's a tool to prevent surgical intervention in these patients. We have retrospective observational data that escalating medical therapy after dilating the patient can be beneficial to prevent need for repeat dilation. So when the patient comes in obstructed, we consider this patient a medical failure, and we then adjust medical therapy, or what we call inflammatory backbone, by adding on, for instance, an immunomodulator to a biologic, testing levels, antibodies in a biologic, or switching a biologic. How do you determine between endoscopic dilation versus surgery? What favors endoscopic dilation is an anastomotic strip, as I mentioned, a short stenosis, a long interval to previous surgery or dilation, or intermittent obstructive episode. What favors strictureplasty or resection, if it's technically difficult to dilate, if the strictures are too long to dilate, or if the symptom-free interval after dilation is too short. Any associated symptoms with a stricture, such as abscess, fistula, phlegma, dysplasia, or malignancy, we resect. And if you have long-standing or significant pre-stenotic dilatation, we also have a lower threshold for resection in these patients. Just want to briefly mention at the end that colonic strictures are in a different category because they have a higher risk for malignancy. And the main risk factors for malignancy are disease duration, the location of the stricture proximal to the splenic flexure, or symptomatic large bowel obstruction. But overall, if you have a colonic stricture and you sample the stricture with biopsies, brushings, or other techniques you have at your disposal, and then after that the patient goes to surgery for stricture resection, still 5% in ulcerative colitis and about 1% of the patient with Crohn's disease-related colonic strictures turn out to have cancer, and several percent more turn out to have low-grade or high-grade dysplasia. So even with excessive sampling of the stricture and endoscopy, that does not exclude a malignancy in a stricture that should be carefully surveyed. So how do we sum up the treatment algorithm, the management of stricture in Crohn's disease? So the patient comes in, symptoms of obstruction, we get cross-sectional imaging, the patient gets admitted, and then we see is inflammation present, and we can assume that in almost all instances, this is the case. We treat anti-inflammatory. If this fails or the symptom-free interval is short, we then determine between three approaches: balloon dilation, resection, or strictureplasty, so bowel-preserving surgery. And the determining factor is the stricture length. Less than 5 centimeters can go to dilation as long as it's in reach of endoscopy. If it's greater than 5 centimeters or outside of reach of endoscopy, but no fistula, dysplasia, malignancy associated with it, this could be candidates for strictureplasty, and everyone else would go to surgical resection. As you may have heard, this field is in strong need for selective antifibrotic therapies for stricture in Crohn's disease, which currently do not exist and have not been tested, despite many, many compounds being in clinical trials for fibrotic diseases in other organs. An international consortium called the Stenosis Therapy and Antifibrotic Research Consortium is developing clinical trial endpoints for stricture in Crohn's disease, which in fact now led to the first global randomized controlled trial in this indication starting in 2021. So I believe, despite this being a clinically challenging situation, the future is bright for patients with stricture in Crohn's disease. So let me summarize. Control of inflammation is the first step in therapy. Anti-TNF do not cause strictures. Endoscopic dilation is indicated for strictures less than 5 centimeters, but you want to have imaging first to exclude fistula, abscess, or phlegma. Serial dilation is feasible, but you want to escalate medical therapy after dilation. And this will depend on patient preference and symptom-free interval. You want to perform resection in case of a fistula, abscess, phlegma, or malignancy, and colonic strictures should be carefully surveyed. Thank you very much for joining this podcast, and have a good day.